We are 5 years on from what people in Charlottesville, Virginia call the summer of hate. We're talking about the white nationalist rally and the violence that followed, and how, to many, it has jolted a renewed conversation on race in the city.
One people, one nation, and their oppression.
On the night of August 11th, about 250 white supremacists carried lit torches, and they confronted students on the campus of the University of Virginia. The next morning, the white nationalists gathered at a downtown park, where they met protesters opposing them. In the violence that followed, a neo-Nazi plowed his car into a group of counter-protesters, killing 32-year-old Heather Heyer and injuring several others. The marchers have long left, but the events have prompted people in Charlottesville to look at their city's own legacy of white supremacy.
The thing that enraged me the most about August 11 and 12, 2017, was the number of well-meaning white people who in tears said, "This is not who we are. It's exactly who we are. Where the heck have you been?"
Reverend Brenda Brown Grooms is, as you just heard, rather feisty. She's co-pastor of New Beginnings Christian Community, which works literally to feed the poor.
Charlottesville, for all its loveliness and for all its progressiveness, is essentially a feudal state. There is landed gentry, and there are the serfs who work the land. And it might be 2022, but that is essentially the same topography, if you will.
Pastor Brenda, and she tells us to call her Brenda, remembers vividly the day of the Unite the Right rally. She was at the park where the clashes began.
I was at the First United Methodist building, which was headquarters, right across from the park. And I was on the prayer detail. We were taking in people who were being pepper sprayed and assaulted, and they would come in for first aid, and they'd come for prayer or just for debriefing or just to catch their breaths.
She says that day reminded her of the fragility of American democracy.
I'm not a despairing person by nature, but I came as close to despair as I've ever been in my life.
When the crowds cleared and the city tried to make sense of the tragedy, Reverend Brown Grooms couldn't stop thinking and talking about inequalities that have a long tail in the history of the South, and that still exists today. I meet her with my producer colleague James Mastro Marino at her church. On most days, she's giving away food.
We feed at least 300 people a week.
Alongside volunteers like Phyllis Hazy Camp.
We're here 4 days a week, and we hate to throw food away. So anybody that needs food, it doesn't matter your status, your race, your nationality. If you need to eat, come see us at New Beginnings Christian Community.
On this day, resident Karen Nash is picking up zucchini off of tables with fresh produce and frozen meats and baked goods.
This is one of the churches here that I know of, the only church that I know of, that it's not prejudice against any race. It's come as you are. Everyone is welcome with open arms and plenty of love here.
Here is what underlies the social justice mission. Charlottesville has 45,000 people, according to the 2020 census, 70% white, 19% black. Nearly a quarter of the population lives in poverty. And by one measure, Charlottesville has more economic inequality than the entire state of Virginia, and more than the country as a whole.
Many of our people are concerned with surviving day to day. And so they leave a lot of issues, hot button issues, for those of us whom they consider to be their mouthpieces and who have actually the time and energy to address those.
She shares this messaging with another mouthpiece, as she calls it, with Jelaine Schmidt. She's a religious studies professor at the University of Virginia and an activist who has worked to remove Confederate statues across the city.
At the time of the Civil War, over half of the population locally was enslaved, about 14,000 people. And so when you know that, you know, that over half the population was enslaved, you just have to see that these statues, these Confederate statues, are really, they're pieces of propaganda.
As Schmidt puts it, the message of the statues was, "Whites are still in charge." What followed was a long history of disenfranchisement, segregation, intimidation under Jim Crow.
Here in 1898, we had a lynching. A man was lynched a black man. The sheriff and the police chief were at the lynching. I mean, if that just kind of gives you any indication of just how bad things were. You know, no one was ever prosecuted.
Schmidt says in the 20th century, African Americans were repeatedly pushed out of their neighborhoods. One was called Vinegar Hill.
You've got dentists, you've got attorneys, funeral directors, pastors, teachers, you know, a lot of professional folk and also working class folk. You know, entertainment venues, you know, pool halls, you know, barber shops.
I can hear the buzz the way you describe
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's bustling.
But in the 1960s, the city voted to bulldoze Vinegar Hill. At the time, most black residents could not vote due to longtime poll taxes and other measures.
And it pushed people who had formerly been homeowners into public housing where they were renters. Home ownership is most families' primary wealth builder. Use it to mortgage it, or you know, put your kids through college, or maybe you know, mortgage it to you know, start a small business. Or, you know, it's a nest egg. This happened in living memory. There are a lot of older black residents here who remember their homes.
Housing is just one axis of inequality, and as Schmidt sees it, the job going forward is not just to know about how housing inequality affects marginalized communities. It's to fix the problem. One solution is to allow more density and affordable duplexes, not just single-family homes in neighborhoods. It's a tough sell to the wealthy class, she says.
It amazes me because like you look at these people's Instagram accounts of where they go on vacation, and you know, they're in Florence or they're in Paris, London. Oh, look at this charming neighborhood with the cobblestone streets and all the houses are, you know, blended together and they're in varying styles and they're, you know, wall by wall and there's, you know, commercial space on the street level and cafes and stuff and then people living above. And why is this charming when it's elsewhere, but it's not, but we can't have that here.
This reality of inequality is what Reverend Brenda Brown Grooms means when she says, and we're going to play it again,
"Where the heck have you been?"
On this afternoon, after the church food pantry is shut down, we take a break and sit on stacked chairs in the sanctuary. Above us, there's a big sign that reads, "Relationship, not religion." And one relationship that Brown Grooms says has deepened since the 2017 Unite the Right rally has been among faith leaders. To tell these stories, to listen, to learn where the city has been.
And what has come out of August 11 and 12, 2017 is that many of us who had absolutely no relationships before have relationships. And it's out of those relationships that we have work and we continue to work and we'll be able to work some more out of the bedrock of relationship, which is what's wrong with this country.
To her, the crisis of 5 years ago creates an opportunity today.
So everybody's reacting on a visceral level and forming relationships from that place of tension, that place of rawness and vulnerability. And when you form relationships at that level, they are deep.
And indeed, it is raw.
We may not say it out loud, but any black and brown people ask themselves, what's wrong with white people? Are they human? We ask that question. It's not an academic question. It's a very real, real question. Mm. It's a real question. And as a Christian, a Christ follower, I am commanded to love. But it's hard. This loving stuff is hard work. How do we do it? How do we manage it?
Pastor Brenda says one way to push forward is to speak collectively. Through the Interfaith Charlottesville Clergy Collective.
We tell the truth. So we begin to say, yep, that's unequal. We have to fix this. I've got to be willing to give up the comfort of having all the food and let somebody else have it. I have to give up the comfort of raking in money that I really don't need with my housing rent and change zoning so that we can have more housing.
These tough questions are being asked across Virginia and the American South as communities battle over statues and history and how they connect to inequities today. As for Pastor Brown Grooms, she is ready to bring it.
There's something I call cosmic poker, the way God plays poker. Well, the way God plays poker is he asks us to bet everything on love. And I do. I bet everything on love. Do you know why? Because I can't lose. I might suffer. It may look like I lost anything, but actually, I cannot lose. Not with love. Does that mean I won't smack you beside your head? It does not. But I will figure out how to love you anyway. I will tell you, I am about to smack you up beside your head because you have gotten on my very last nerve. But I love you, brother. Okay?
Tonight, interfaith leaders will hold a vigil to remember what happened 5 years ago and to pray for whatever comes next.